Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Ben Azadi, and we just had a blast having this conversation. So I'm really excited for you all to listen in because we had a very clear intention going into this podcast. Our aim was to make this a real resource for anyone who is looking at keto and sleep. So what I mean by that is if you're keto curious, if you are beginning the process of going into ketosis, or if you are a longtime keto connoisseur, then this is really our goal, is that this is a podcast you can refer to of different things that you can do to make a difference to ease yourself in a way that will help support your sleep. And then over time, also make a difference with your HRV. Many of you are in that conversation of heart rate variability, but if not, just, you know, the takeaway being that your overall recovery metrics or your sense of recovery is improved, as well as that sleep quality while you are experimenting with ketosis. And he really also helps us understand this concept of keto flexing, how to flex in and out of ketosis and the benefits that that can have for our metabolic flexibility. So a little bit about Ben. In 2008, Ben Azadi went through a personal health transformation of shedding 80 pounds of pure fat. Ever since, Ben Azadi has been on a mission to help 1 billion people live a healthier lifestyle. Ben is the author of 3 best-selling books, The Perfect Health Booklet, The Intermittent Fasting Cheat Sheet, and The Power of Sleep. Ben has been the go-to source for intermittent fasting and the ketogenic diet. He is known as the health detective because he investigates dysfunction and he educates, not medicates, to bring the body back to normal function. Ben is the founder of Keto Camp, a global brand bringing awareness to ancient healing strategies such as the keto diet and fasting. Ben is the host of a top 15 podcast, the Keto Camp podcast, and the fast-growing Keto Camp YouTube channel with over 120,000 subscribers. Also, very important, he just launched or released Keto Flex. It's a book that I have been referring to, and I think all of you will really enjoy checking out more about Ben. And he is just an infectious kind of curiosity and just such a good person. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing more from him and all the wisdom that he can bring on this topic. So without further ado, let's dive in. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call, so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill, again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. I could not be more ecstatic to get into this conversation today. Today is really a special conversation with a special person. Ben, we had the opportunity to connect with at Biohacking Congress, and I've been a follower of his amazing content that he's putting out routinely. Both certainly you're going to want to check out a lot of the different places where he posts his content. I'm a big fan of his YouTube channel, but then also I am deep into his book right now, Keto Flex. So we'll be talking about, you know, various things around what he's got coming. But our intention with this episode is really to make this a clear reference point for wherever you may be on the conversation of keto and its impact on your sleep and your health. We get a lot of questions also about HRV. So our aim is to kind of address some of those questions, call outs, concerns, or the excitement around the possibility of making improvements in all these areas by virtue of exploring keto and the many benefits that can be there. So without further ado, Ben, welcome to the show. And I can't wait to hear more about your background and how you got into this area and how that impacts our sleep.
Yeah, Molly, thank you so much. I'm grateful to be on your awesome show. I love the work that you're doing and you do a great service to the world. So I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We had such a connection there at Biohacking Congress and then with your girlfriend and now fiance. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you just brought such incredible energy and your talk was fantastic. So the opportunity to go deeper with you today is not going past me. I'm really grateful for it. So can't wait for more.
And we were the best students at that Congress, weren't we? We were at the front taking notes the whole time, taking photos, right?
Absolutely. I shared in my newsletter, I was like, you know, I got pulled up on stage for asking so many questions and you were right there with me. You were fantastic. And the energy you brought was just really kind of bringing that beginner's mind despite having so much content. So I really appreciate when people are able to do that and not think that, you know, they've arrived or, you know, they're done with the learning. Your curiosity is clear. So excited for more.
Thank you. And you know, the worst thing to say is I already know that, right? It just shuts you off from learning. Yes. So I love that you're a constant learner. I am as well. And selfishly, you know, I'm a podcast host myself and you're coming on my show. Selfishly, I'm sure you could agree that being a podcast host is awesome because you get to learn from so many people. Like selfishly, I want to interview all these amazing minds and I want to just learn from them and then get it out to the world. But selfishly, I'm learning it myself.
Yes,
so it's
absolutely.
What a fun field we're in right in the podcast game.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I mean, just even having you on my calendar for today, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be fun. And, yeah. You know, and just to have so many thought leaders like that, to have the opportunity to go deeper with, it's amazing. So shared respect. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want me to get into my story?
Yes, if you could. I know I threw a lot of things at you at once. Yes, please.
No, it's fine. We're having fun. Okay. Yeah. So my story is that I grew up here in Miami Beach, Florida, where I still currently live. Beautiful Miami Beach, Florida. My parents immigrated here from Iran in the 1970s. So they immigrated here. They got divorced. I was born in 1984. And I grew up following a standard American diet, which we know is toxic. It's really a stupid American diet. And I hung out with the wrong crowd. I did drugs. I was consumed by video games and sugar and alcohol. And I was just really, really toxic environment mentally, physically around me. And it showed in my physical appearance. I found myself being one of those kids that was bullied and obese and picked on. And as an adult, as a 24-year-old back in 2008, I was a 250-pound obese man, physically obese, mentally obese. I was going through a really difficult time in my life where my girlfriend at that time broke up with me. She left me because the relationship was going nowhere, rightfully so. I didn't know how to handle it. And I was so depressed. And depressed is an understatement. I was actually suicidal. I was looking for ways to end the suffering and end the pain. And I would think about my mom every single time and it would stop me. Thank God for pursuing that. And I knew I had to figure things out. I was tired of hurting every single day. I was tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I know a lot of people could relate. Somebody listening to this right now might be in their rock bottom or they have hit rock bottom before. But you know what? Rock bottom, there's a beautiful thing about hitting rock bottom. The ugliness about it is that it feels really difficult. you feel like you're down in the dirt, you're all the way down there. But the positive note is that as far down as you are, you could go in the opposite direction. So for me, it was books, Molly, that helped me understand personal ownership and responsibility. I started to read books because I was trying to figure things out. So I started to get into the work of Dr. Wayne Dyer, Lisa Nichols, Bob Proctor, Earl Nightingale, Jim Rohn, all these incredible people. The most important thing they did for me was help me take ownership and responsibility. And that word, responsibility, is a word that is lost on so many people, especially in this day and age. That is your ability to respond to life. Up until that point, my ability to respond to life was playing the victim card. It's my genetics. It's my enabling family members, my slow metabolism. I can't do anything right because of X, Y, Z. So taking responsibility changed my life. It took me from that victim of my history to the victor of my destiny. And I started to actually focus on my nutrition, on my sleep, on my exercise. And 9 months from that responsibility moment, I went from 250 pounds down to 170 pounds, 34% body fat down to 6% body fat. I used to wear a size 38 waist in my pants. I went down to size 30. And I finally carved out like a physical six pack, which for me was important at that time. Not that that is a synonymous with good health, but for me, it was a goal. But the most important thing that I achieved was a mental six pack. I started to actually think better thoughts, positive thoughts, start to love myself more. I started to practice gratitude. And that's what everything opened up for me back then. That was in 2008. I lost the weight, and that's what started my journey into the health space. I became a personal trainer. I ended up opening up a CrossFit gym here in Miami. I ended up selling the CrossFit gym here in Miami. And then I was just figuring out health along the way. And then I became certified as a functional health practitioner. And that's been my journey. Now I have my company Keto Camp, and we're on a mission to educate and to inspire 1 billion people. The message we want to get out to the world is that you are a masterpiece because you are a piece of the master. And all you have to do is follow 3 principles to healing. And those 3 principles are outlined in the book Keto Flex. But number one, it's identify interference. And usually it's multiple things. Number two, work on removing the interference. And number three, allow your body to heal. We have within us the world's greatest healer, the world's greatest physician already, which is the innate intelligence. And there's no pill, there's no surgery, there's no vaccine, there's no supplement that could replace what we have within us already. We just need to do our job at identifying that interference and work on removing it, and your body will heal no matter what you're going through. And that's the message you want to get out to the world.
Wow. Yeah. I'm continuing to be blown away by your story and the transformation. It gives me cold chills just when you speak to the power of hitting rock bottom. That's very similar to my story with my sleep at the time. You know, when we go through that, those moments of rock bottom, it can often be challenging to see what good could come out of that during that moment. But then in retrospect, if you're able to, and sometimes even in the moment, if you're able to latch on to what you're speaking to and taking full responsibility for yourself in your life, then it can be one of the most empowering things. And so for me, I'm so grateful for that period in hindsight because it changed the course of my life. And it sounds like the exact same thing for you. And so I really appreciate your vulnerability in sharing your background. It can be easy to kind of glaze past those periods, and having the strength and courage to highlight that is so empowering for those of us that are somewhere in that beginning stage where you were at. And then those great thinkers, oh my goodness, I was a Wayne Dyer lover. Oh, I got to see him speak one time, and it was
Did you?
Yes, yes. Back in New York. Yeah, it was amazing. Went to Maui, and you know how he was out there and before he passed, and just really such an amazing thinker. So yes, and
I love that, Molly. I didn't know that. You're so blessed to be. I've never seen him. I didn't get the opportunity to see him in person. I listen to him every single morning, still to this day.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, he just, I mean, there's certain things that are in my mind in his same cadence and speaking. And he used to talk about sleep. He would talk about, you know, setting our mind based on, oh, I got 4 hours last night and now I'm going to, right? Like he would have, so some of those things are just drilled in my mind of how much our kind of mental game makes a role in our health and our framework and our outlook. So there's just so much there. But then also I love your approach to wellness and that framework, that way of thinking, the kind of three-part series or steps to, to really healing. So it's fantastic. So we're going to get deeper into that. So, and certainly there's so much that you have to share. And I know in your book, there's wealth that's beyond keto as a component, and you have so much beyond that as well. And in this conversation, we get a ton of questions around how do you navigate keto and sleep, and then kind of a bumpy road for some people when they dive right in without being fully prepared or setting up their body to be prepared or their mind to be prepared. So I'm wondering if you could just start at the kind of ABCs for those of us that might be new to this realm of taking on keto into our life, and then we can get deeper for those that are more seasoned.
Yeah, absolutely. So keto is now a buzzword, as you know, Molly. A lot of people are talking about keto, ketogenic diet, keto this, keto that. And it's great because people are becoming aware to the word keto and the process of keto. But it's unfortunate, a lot of people who do keto or even teach it don't really teach it from the lens of looking at the body from a cellular lens and how the hormones communicate with the cells. That's the way that I approach it, and we approach it here at my company. So keto technically is not a diet. It's a metabolic process, and it has been around since humans have existed. Every single one of our ancestors, they did keto because their environment forced them into ketosis, and then their environment helped them flex out of ketosis, which is hence keto flex. So for a beginner, I want to just lay the framework here and why, how keto could actually help you with your health and even your sleep. And then we could kind of go over like some of the protocols if you're struggling as you're making the transition. How do you fix your sleep with it? Because it is, it could be common, because anytime you make a change, it could create a stress in the body, which could impact your sleep. So when we look at the body, there's about 70 trillion cells inside of the body. But out of those 70 trillion cells, we only have two options for fuel. Either we're burning glucose and sugar, or we're burning fat and producing ketones. That's the only two options. Most people, they're stuck as sugar burners. When I was obese, I was a sugar burner. But there is something challenging to being a sugar burner, because when your cells are stuck at burning sugar, it creates a lot of inflammation around the cells, and it actually inflames the membrane. So then toxins can't get out, and then good things can't get in. So I compare burning sugar, a cell that's burning sugar, to a truck that's speeding through the streets with all the smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe. The truck is not going to be healthy for the surrounding environment. Well, when your cells are stuck as sugar burners, it's not healthy for the cellular environment. So what we want to do is teach the body to switch to a different fuel source, make this metabolic switch to burning fat. And I compare that to a Tesla cruising through the streets, much cleaner for the surrounding environment, much cleaner for your cellular environment. So how do you make that switch? Where do you start? I like the low and slow approach. I'm not a big fan of the cold turkey approach. The average American is eating about 300 grams of carbs per day. What we want to do is eventually take the 300 and drop it down to less than 50 grams of carbs for the day. But I don't recommend doing that like tomorrow. You want to have a gradual approach. So in the book, I talk about that. But you want to, first of all, decrease those carbs slowly. It could be like a 7-day protocol to eventually land below 50 grams. But at the same time, you want to introduce an abundance of healthy fats so your body could get familiar with utilizing fatty acids instead of glucose. So there's what's called the 2-2-2-2 rule that I outline in my book. This is great for a beginner. So if you're a beginner listening right now, this is something that I want you to do if you're going to do keto. Every single day, at least for the first 14 days, you want to consume 2 tablespoons of grass-fed butter or grass-fed ghee, 2 tablespoons of olive oil or avocado oil, 2 tablespoons of MCT oil or coconut oil. And the final 2 is 2 teaspoons of sea salt. The sea salt is important because you want to replenish your electrolytes. As you lower your carbs, you're going to lose some electrolytes. If you do that and you decrease your carbs gradually below 50 grams, in about 7 days, you'll be in this what I call great land of ketosis. You'll have this mental clarity, and then you'll see your sleep actually improve. Now, what will happen for some people, not all, you might see your sleep actually decrease, your sleep quality decrease. So what you can do for those first 7 to 14 days is have 1 teaspoon of raw organic honey right before bed, which actually could give your brain enough glycogen to help you with sleep and actually help you stay asleep. So if you're struggling, if you're waking up in the middle of the night during this transition, this could be a big game changer for you. I don't recommend doing it every night, but those first 7 to 14 days would be key. And then in 7 to 14 days, you'll be in ketosis, and then you can start doing different, more advanced strategies that we could get into.
Absolutely. So first of all, yes, thank you for outlining that. The low and slow thought process is really important there, and not to be underestimated, that protocol, the 222, because those are so, so crucial. And I've gotten a number of clients asking, and you were so kind to answer this at Biohacking Congress, maybe you can share just a real brief. A number of clients have asked, oh my goodness, I now have wearables and I'm bringing in ketosis into my practice and suddenly my HRV is tanking. One, if you could just share real quick, is that common? Two, what can some of our expectations be around HRV and keto as we navigate these different stages of keto? And then, yeah, we can certainly get deeper into some extended protocols for keto and sleep.
Yeah, so it can happen. It doesn't happen most of the time, sure. But for a small percentage, you might see a decrease in HRV and some of your sleep scores. And again, it's because you're making changes. And anytime you make a change, it's a stress to the body. The body needs to adapt and you might see that slump in the HRV. So the honey could help with that. It's also important, sure, as you teach Molly, to have some sleep hygiene. And I'm going to share a little bit what I do.
Sure.
But something else you can do is banana tea. Banana tea is keto friendly. I know it doesn't sound keto friendly because it's banana in there, but I actually learned this from Dr. Michael Bruce, who's America's sleep doctor.
Yeah.
And what you want to do is just grab a whole banana, make sure it's organic, and leave the peel on, but just cut off the ends of the banana. The reason we leave the peel on is because the banana peel has more micronutrients, potassium, magnesium, than the actual banana itself. So you put the banana with the peel on in a pot, 1 to 2 cups of water, let it boil until the peel starts to turn brown. And then you just pour that into a cup, discard the banana or put it into the freezer, drink the banana tea, and that's like nature's NyQuil. It'll help calm you down. And you should see an increase in your HRV by doing that. And as your body transitions and gets more metabolically flexible, you don't have to rely on the banana tea. You'll see that HRV naturally increase.
And from an ancestral perspective, can you speak to just in that, you know, people call it keto flu or what have you, what's going on from a nervous system perspective there, kind of sympathetic versus parasympathetic? And so why that could make sense for that period when HRV would dip, but then presumably that it would go up and often for many people go up to higher than they've previously experienced. Like, what is happening there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I haven't really been asked that question before. So kudos to you. That's a great question. So, well, let's address the keto flu component.
Sure.
And a lot of people hear that word keto flu. Technically, it's not an issue with keto per se. It's really carbohydrate withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
So it's more like the carb flu. And what happens is when you're making these changes, when you are eating regular diet, a standard American diet, you're eating carbs, you are raising insulin and then your body's retaining a lot of water. Insulin causes you to retain a lot of water. So now that you're lowering your carbs and increasing your fat, you're going to retain less water. You're going to have this release of excess water, which is terrific because you're going to feel lighter and look lighter. However, the kidneys also then have this what's called electrolyte dumping process where it dumps these electrolytes with the water. So by number one, going low and slow, by not going cold turkey with the carbs, but low and slow, that's a good tip that I already mentioned. Number two, being really diligent with your minerals and your electrolytes and your sea salt every single day to replenish those electrolytes will make a big difference. Now, with the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, when you're making the change, it's going to take you more towards the sympathetic because it's a change, the stressor to the body. It's hormesis, right? But as now your body is adapting to it, you'll shift back to the parasympathetic. So it's just that adaptation period. But if you're making all these little tweaks and biohacks essentially that we're sharing here, you're going to find yourself actually not really experiencing any of those symptoms. And if you do, you could just follow through with those protocols and eventually you'll see the heart rate variability go back up and your sleep will get improved.
So awesome. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So if we get a little bit deeper for those people that they are going in and out of ketosis or they have metabolic flexibility or they're just more seasoned in this conversation, are there things that you suggest for those folks for their relationship to their sleep, any wake-ups that they might experience? And then, you know, there's different rumbles of, you know, kind of anecdotal things that people might do and ketone esters and timing of things and all of those. So if you can help us navigate what makes sense to bring in from a sleep perspective and what to expect.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love sleep, first of all. I love that you teach sleep. You know, it's more important than anything, even more than keto and fasting, because You could go days without food and fast. You could go days without exercise. Can't go days without sleep. You turn into a crazy person. So it is fundamental. So it's such an important topic. I love that you address it well. Here's the thing. When you are starting to lose weight on keto, which you will, it's a good thing, especially if you want to lose weight, the body is very smart. The number one priority for the innate intelligence, the human body, is actually survival. So what happens, I'm going to bring in the toxicity component and relate it to sleep. What happens is your body stores toxins in your fat cells. And Molly, let's face it, we live in the most toxic world like ever before. When we think about silver amalgam fillings, lead-based paint from the 1978 and before, contact lenses in the 80s had mercury in them. Also, car fumes and cleaning stuff. I mean, it could go on and on and on. So what happens is the toxins, when they enter the body from smelling, eating, or touching the skin, the body does not want those toxins to enter the vital organs. So it's smart. It wants to survive. It activates a pathway called PPARY, which shuttles those toxins into your fat cells, making you fat or even increasing your fat cells. So that's how toxins make you fat. So now you're starting to burn your fat cells, shrink your fat cells, release your fat cells on keto, which is terrific, but your body cannot burn toxins. It could burn fat, not toxins. So then it overworks the liver, and between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m., the liver is very active at dumping bile. So if you find yourself waking up at that time on a consistent basis, you might need some liver support. You might need to do some liver coffee enemas, liver cleanses, some flushes, maybe activate the lymphatic system some more, even do some more upstream detox. But doing some sort of detox, supporting the liver, incorporating more bitters as well, can make a big difference with that 2 to 4 a.m. wake up time. I've seen that a lot with people who are very toxic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's one of the more common things that we'll hear from people. Well, in general, certainly wake ups, but then in particular, when they're navigating through low carb and back and forth into keto or other kind of protocols, seeing that those consistent wake ups and that advice is really important. So not to be underestimated. How about the frequency of that? Do you feel like, do you traditionally have people, you know, have a heavy protocol with that for an extended period of time, or just experiment bioindividuality?
So with the bitters, you could incorporate bitters on a daily basis. You could rotate the types of bitters, arugula, ginger, ginger tea, dandelion greens, apple cider vinegar. These are all things we could kind of rotate. For detox, I think detox should be cyclical. Everything in nature is cyclical. We have the seasons, the monthly cycle for ladies, cyclical. So detox should be cycled on and off. How that works, like you said, how it would work is custom to the person. Right. You could do 3 days on of some detox support, 4 days off. You could just go through a bottle of liver support and then get off of it for a month. So I like to rotate the supplementation. So it'll be cyclical and it'll be dependent on the person. Somebody might be as good just doing a castor oil packs at night and just putting it on their liver for 5 days in a row. That could solve the problem. Some people might need more extensive detox. So it'll be determined on the person and how much toxicity they actually have.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. And then we did have one keto expert on here, but that was pointing to the ketone esters and timing of that. Do you see any benefits from that from a sleep perspective at different times, or things to be aware of with that at certain timing throughout the day? Or is that still kind of anecdotal?
Yeah, I haven't really seen much evidence or used it myself. You know, in theory, it might make sense that if you're transitioning in the beginning from a glucose sugar burner to a fat burner, and you take some exogenous ketones before bed, it might have some energy, an energy source, so you don't have to have a cortisol response. I don't know. I'm just guessing there, but no, I don't really.
Yeah, sure. No, that's a great point. And it's what's challenging here too, is that they're so you're such a trailblazer in this area, and we're still, you know, looking for more and more large scale studies. And so certainly you're having to pull from, what's amazing is you've gotten this, you've created this whole following and a group of so many people that you're able to pull from experiences, and we're still challenge to get more of those large scale studies. So I know it is hard to answer some of those stories, N equal one conversation.
Exactly. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because anecdotal evidence in large volumes could be superb. I don't tend to like to rely on exogenous ketones in general.
Sure.
The only time that I would usually use them or recommend them would be traveling on an airplane to help with the radiation, maybe for like a brain performance hack, like before a podcast like this, or going before like x-rays. But I don't rely on them typically. They're not a go-to of mine.
Great. Well, thank you for answering that and clearing that up. So the other question too is women and keto. And I know we're going to have Dr. Mindy on the podcast to go deeper into this, which is exciting. So yay. But
She's the best.
Absolutely. But just as a quick primer or anything from your experience to call out or ways to think about that area for women.
Yeah, a lot of what I learned about keto and fasting for women is credited to Dr. Mindy and Dr. Stephanie Estima and a few other brilliant doctors out there. So yeah, in chapter 12 of my book, I have an entire chapter on women for keto and fasting, cycling women versus postmenopausal women. So I'll give you some general things and then I'm sure Mindy will really deep dive into the science. She's the perfect person to ask.
Yes.
So a woman who has a monthly cycle, the 5 to 7 days right before the cycle is when we don't want to do too much keto or too much fasting because we see progesterone and estrogen in decline. And we actually need healthy insulin spikes to increase the progesterone and estrogen to help these hormonal conversions. So that would be the worst time to practice strict keto and fasting. Once the cycle hits that bleed week, you could do strict keto. You could do your block fast if you want to do 3 or more days. That would be the best week to do it. The second week would be more of a protein building week because you have an increase in testosterone. So strength training, increasing your protein. You could still do keto, but you want to focus more on protein that week. Those are some general rules of thumb to follow if you're a cycling woman. If you're postmenopausal, now there's a different things that happen here. The ovaries, which by the way, the ovaries are incredible. I mean, I don't have ovaries, but it has the most mitochondria in any part of the human body, more for men and women, 100,000 mitochondria in a single cell in the ovary. That is crazy. Most cells have hundreds to thousands, but not 100,000. And if you think about it, I believe in God. God is amazing. And the way that God created us is the organs that are mostly metabolically active and for survival are the organs that have the highest concentration of mitochondria. So the ovaries, reproduction, of course, survival, the eyes, higher in mitochondria. You want to be alert and focused, the brain, the heart. So it's absolutely magnificent. So the reason I bring that up is because when you are postmenopausal, the ovaries have retired. They're like, peace out, I'm done. You could get the fat cells to do my job, get the adrenals to pick up the slack. So the adrenals pick up the slack with stress and cortisol and the fat cells with leptin. So at that point, yes, you could still do keto and fasting, but I recommend increasing the protein and having 1 or 2 days per week where you intentionally flex out of ketosis with the keto flex day, higher healthy carbs, and do some things to really master your stress because now the adrenals are picking up the slack. So meditation, sleep for sure, making sure you're having some sort of self-love and gratitude practice. That'll be what I would recommend for the postmenopausal woman.
Very helpful. Wow. So one of the things that I was struck with, and I know your book goes greatly in depth on this and the title says it all, the flex, is just making this point that I still think some people are new to, that when we were talking about navigating ketosis, that there's one of the points that you're making is that we shouldn't always be in a strict ketosis. So I was wondering if you could point to, for men, how they can approach this and how they can bring their own cycle in. I know one of the things I thought was really cool from Dr. Mindy's points at Biohacking Congress was this concept of embracing our cycle. Cause I often for many years been like, oh, you gotta, you know, it's so much easier to be a guy and you can just, you know, absolutely navigate this area with ease and you don't have to worry about these, you know, 4 very distinct shifts that we go through each month. And yet Dr. Mindy made the point that it's almost kind of this ingrained calendar for us to follow that I thought was really empowering for women. But how about men? How do men then approach this so that they're not overly stressing their body for an extended period of time and have this nice kind of relationship to the flex? And I know the book really outlines it, but just in a quick framework.
Yeah, absolutely. My girlfriend tells me, my fiance tells me that all the time about, you're so lucky, you know, you don't have to go through this every single month. And yeah, there's pros and cons. You do have this internal calendar and it dictates when you should do something. We don't have that. So I like the 5-1-1 rule for men. And I could outline that if you want.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And you do this, to be clear, you do these flexing protocols after you complete the first 3 pillars of my book, which is about 60 days. So first we really strict for 60 days, even for women. I think it's important for those 60 days to be in strict ketosis. And then we can start doing different flexing protocols. So for men, the 5-1-1 rule developed by my mentor, Dr. Daniel Pompa, brilliant man.
Yeah.
He wrote the foreword. Did you enjoy his talk?
I loved his talk. Yeah, I took so many notes from him and absolutely, and his energy was palpable. It's clear that he lives, you know, and practices what he preaches. And also just some of his analogies were fascinating. Chernobyl and, you know, just some of these really...
all the HBO shows. He was like, I promise I don't watch all these TV shows. That was so funny.
That was amazing. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think he's the best in the world. I'm a little biased, but I do think he's the best in the world. But
absolutely.
So the 5-1-1 protocol, it's a 7-day protocol. This is also good for postmenopausal women, by the way, but for men, you too. 5 days out of the week, you're going to be following your favorite intermittent fasting schedule, whatever that is. And then during your eating window, you want to eat meals that are keto friendly. You want to be in ketosis for those 5 days. The first one in the 5-1-1 is a 24-hour water fast where you could just go dinner to dinner, lunch to lunch, or breakfast to breakfast. You choose. I love a 24-hour water fast because you get more growth hormone. There was an interesting study that showed 2,000% increase in growth hormone in men after a 24-hour fast. And in women, it was 1,300%. So you get more growth hormone, you get more gut healing. MIT study showed 24-hour fast strengthen intestinal stem cells. You get more of this autophagy cleanup and repair. So 24 hours is great. And then that final one is your keto flex day. It could be any day of the week, Sunday, Thursday, Saturday. But on that day, you are intentionally getting flexing out of ketosis. You're not going to practice fasting. You're going to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You're going to decrease your total fat to below 30 grams. And you're going to increase your total carbs, healthy carbs, to above 100 to 150. And you could also increase your protein on that day. What that's going to do is going to remind your body of an alternate fuel source besides fat. It's going to be a glucose fuel source, but just for a day, it's going to help with your sex hormone binding globulin, which should reduce that to help free up some testosterone. It'll help with the thyroid. It'll help with fat loss. And if you've done it the right way, you should be able to get right back into ketosis within the next 24 to 48 hours when you go back to your keto and fasting days. So I like the 5-1-1 for men and for postmenopausal women.
Super helpful. Yes, that's great. And how about any thoughts around meal timing with keto? Thomas DeLauer went a little into this topic of kind of swapping what we might traditionally think of for skipping breakfast and then going into, you know, backloading sort of our meals into lunch and dinner. Have you explored some of that for sleep quality? So moving some more of the volume of your food a bit earlier in the day, or do you have people play with that?
I have. And I've actually seen from my anecdotal experience that people do better having the larger meals early evening, later in the afternoon, like somewhere between 3 and 6 p.m.
Sure.
And then if they start to eat it later than that, it could compromise the sleep. I've also seen it work better for people schedule skipping the breakfast. Now, that doesn't mean that that relates to you. You might do better having the breakfast, a bigger meal, and then skipping the dinner. But for me, I've seen the opposite. I've seen people do better by having most of their carbs towards the last part of their meal. And for me personally, that helps as well. And part of that could also help with fat loss because you're going to be able to burn through your sugar reserves, your glycogen stores, and then replenish it. And then you have some time before bed where you start to digest that food, you go to bed and you burn down the sugar reserve. So I like that. Doesn't mean you have to stick to that, but that's my go-to.
Sure. And then one of the last questions is continuous glucose monitors, since becoming so much more in vogue. Do you have people lean into that as they're navigating different places that they might be with ketosis? Are there rules of thought? Do people get too stressed out about the spike and the crash? Or, you know, what are some kind of an outlook that we could have around approaching that continuous glucose monitor?
I think the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, is a fantastic tool. It's one of the best things we can do to really plug in our physiology with the food we're eating and our stress and our sleep. So yeah, if you could get your hands on a CGM, highly recommend it. I've used it for months at a time. I'm going to go back on one soon to do some experimentation. So you could notice with your CGM what poor sleep actually does to raise your glucose the following morning, raise your cortisol, and then your ketones drop just from a poor night of sleep. Your macros might be perfect. So that could give you some good data. And then also, if you're eating keto foods that are actually you have a sensitivity to, you could see that glucose spike up and ketones drop. So that'll give you some good data as well. You could see what stress does for your glucose. As you know, Molly, when you're stressed out, cortisol goes up, glucose falls, insulin falls, and then ketones will drop, and you're just going to feel sluggish, which could interfere with the sleep. at night, and then you get a poor night of sleep, and then you have more stress the next day, and it's a vicious cycle. So you could stop that cycle by looking at that CGM and see what's going on.
Absolutely. I know another anecdotal, and I have a lot of clients that have seen the same thing, but on the continuous glucose monitor, I had one talk that I was giving and there was all this stuff that was happening on the back end. And like, you know, to get to the point, the big old spike that happened, there was no food that was, you know, there was no workout, there was no sauna. This was just stress. And it really can be fascinating to see what can happen there. So it can give us a whole new respect for, you know, the varied things that can influence our body in our health. So really good call outs there. And then shifting a bit more to you and your sleep approach. We have three questions that we're asking everyone around their current approach to sleep. I know I would imagine that shifts and evolves for you. But the first one being, what does your nightly sleep routine look like right now?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So like you said before offline, it has evolved over the years.
Sure.
So I have a really strict sleep routine. Sometimes it drives my fiance crazy, by the way, because it's like 8:15 and Oura Ring is telling me, you should probably go to bed soon. I'm like, oh, let's go to bed. And she's like, it's only 8:15. So if it was up to me, Molly, I would probably go to bed at 8:30 every night, but that pisses off my fiance. So I go to bed like at 9:30, still pretty good.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So my routine is definitely staying away from stimulation at night, not watching the mainstream news, not watching things like CNN or any kind of toxic news source. And I'll either maybe watch something funny with Natasha, my fiance, but I'll read a book. But I'm wearing my blue light blocking glasses at night. As soon as the sun goes down, I'm wearing the orange ones. These are actually blue light blocking glasses too, but they're filtering out more of the computer screens for the daytime. So when the sun goes down, I'll have that. I make sure I don't eat at least 3 hours before bed because that really impacts my HRV and all of my scores. It's probably, it wrecks my scores anytime I eat too close to bed. For you too?
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of the most count-onable things is every client that I work with wears at least the Oura Ring. Again, no affiliation, just happens to be the one that we have our dashboard on. And so we're going over, it looks like ESPN every day of so many people's sleep data scores. And one of the most reliable things that I can point to is alcohol and eating late. Those two are just so clear. We see, you know, a big old bump in often, and it depends on, of course, the person and how sensitive they might be to those things, but often a jump in their heart rate, a dip in their HRV, an uptick in respiratory rate, an uptick in body temperature. So it really is, you're making a great point there.
Yeah, I've seen it as well. And sometimes the ring will tell you in the morning, did you eat too close to bed? Right?
You're yes.
Like, damn it, Oura, you knew.
Exactly.
So I have my nighttime routine. I start to wind down around 9 o'clock. I start to do my night stuff. Sometimes I'll have some reishi mushroom or I'll have some like chamomile or CBD or I'll mix it up. I don't stick with the same thing long-term. Although the other day I had Organifi, I think it's called Gold. Have you had that yet?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a good friend of mine is a big, huge proponent of them. So I actually just got some, I haven't done enough testing though yet. Mm-hmm. So it's in the kitchen.
Right. So I'm curious when you test it, because I had a packet from a conference I was at.
Sure.
And I saw it there. I'm like, oh, I want to try this. First of all, it was delicious. I was so surprised how good it tastes. And this is just 2 days ago. So that I had it with coconut milk. So technically it was close to bed, but it wasn't a heavy meal. But my heart rate variability, I've been getting like 58, 56, 61.
Sure.
That night, the following morning, it went up to 78. And that was the only thing that I changed. So I was like, huh. So I just bought a whole bottle. It's coming tomorrow. I'm going to do some more experimentation to see if that was
one. Oh, let's compare notes.
Yeah. I'll let you know how that goes and you let me know how it goes.
Same.
So I'll use something like that. And then sometimes I'll actually introduce melatonin, but I actually use a suppository high dose melatonin. Dr. John Lawrence, who made this, the Zen product, actually formulated it. It's called Sandman. I got to connect you with him. He'll be a great person
Please.
On your show. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Master of melatonin. He's coming out with a book all about that. He was just on Ben Greenfield's show. He's been on mine several times. So I always go up to his clinic in Sarasota. So he gave me these suppositories, but here's the deal. Melatonin, the suppository that he has called Sandman, 200 milligrams of melatonin.
What? Wow.
Right?
I got to talk to this guy.
Yeah. And it's a super high dose because as you look at supplements, 3 milligrams, sure. 6 milligrams. Yeah. But according to his research, oral melatonin is about, I think his research was about 7% absorbed when you take it orally, or maybe even less. So this one is a slow release. It bypasses digestion, so you get more of that bang for your buck. And I found out through his research that with melatonin, there's actually no negative feedback loop, meaning when you take melatonin exogenously, I used to think that it might shut down your body's capability of storing it and producing it. But it turns out that's not the case. There's no negative feedback loop like there is for testosterone or other hormones. So you could take high dose melatonin for weeks or even months. I don't recommend that. But let's say you did, you stop taking it and your body goes right back to making the melatonin, which is super fascinating. So it's called Sandman. It's a suppository. It has some other things in there. Sometimes I will use that. And then, we start to wind down for the bed. I have my notepad right next to my bed where I write down 10 things I'm grateful for every single night. I haven't missed a day in almost 4 years now. I'll write down 10 things I'm grateful for that happened during the day. Tonight, I'm going to write, I'm grateful that I was on the Sleep as a Skill podcast with Molly and we crushed it. So I'll write down that. I'll write down my goals and then I'll read my burning desire statement from Think and Grow Rich. And then that's it. Go to bed. And I usually fall asleep in about 10 minutes from lying down. But the most important thing that helps me with sleep at night is what I do in the morning, which is getting morning sunlight. Every morning I walk my dog, I'm letting that sun hit my retina, as you know, so important to set that circadian rhythm. And I get sun throughout the day being in Miami, so my body's actually storing more melatonin getting the sun for the night ahead. So those are some things that I do.
Oh, so helpful. So number one, fascinating about the melatonin, because to your point, yeah, there is kind of conflicting camps around absolutely, you know, layer in tons of melatonin. And then other camps are saying, oh, you want to be really mindful about this because we don't want to impact our body's ability to naturally produce that. So thank you for sharing what you've discovered in that camp. And then some other kind of alternative ways of getting it into the body so that it can be more bioavailable. That's really fascinating. And then gratitude. I am so grateful that you shared that because, again, we are such kindred spirits. I think I might have shared with you in our conversation that I've been doing a nightly email to friends and family for like 2,200 and something days. Same deal. It's like that streak effect. You don't want to stop the streak.
I love that you do that. It's so awesome.
Oh, it's really been transformative. And, you know, because at different points in your life, I mean, that's part of the training to do this because, you know, one of the things that can often, you can certainly share your experience, but for me, there's still an effect of when I do it, I'm like, oh, what am I grateful for? I don't know. And then I start when I'm like, what are you nuts? There's like 9 million things. And it just represents you on a daily basis and really starts to rewire that brain. And absolutely, you will be in my gratitude list for tonight. So really grateful there. Awesome. And it does have such a contagion effect too, especially when we share it with others. So such a great practice. And then if you do have a partner, if you're able to share that with your partner before bed, that can be such a wonderful thing to bring in as well. So you also brought us in a bit to the second question as far as what's on the nightstand. Anything else that we would see there that's noteworthy or even the proverbial nightstand, like gadgets or ambiance or anything to be aware of?
Yeah, I wear earplugs because sometimes there's some street noise, even though I have a white noise machine running too, that which helps me. I also mouth tape with Somnifix. Every night I'll mouth tape. And then I also wear a sleep mask as well because I don't have blackout curtains. So I have that. What else do I have? My glasses for blue light blocking. I'll take that off at that time. And then I have a lamp, a sun simulation lamp, because I wake up a little bit before the sun comes up. So it simulates the sun coming up in my bedroom, which turns on like 15 minutes before I want to get up.
Perfect. That is awesome. Okay, great. And then the last question is, what would you say has been the biggest sleep aha moment or change to your sleep game?
For me, it was discovering this money time sleep window concept of 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., how you get most of that growth hormone, most of that delta sleep during that time frame. And when I used to go to bed around 11:30, 12, and then wake up a little bit later, and then I flipped it and went to bed a little bit earlier and woke up a little bit earlier. And that was a game changer for me. And that's based off of our, as you know, as our circadian rhythm. The sun goes down, we're supposed to go down. So most of the growth hormone, most of the delta sleep is happening during that time frame. And of course, it's different for where you live according to the equator. So for me, that was the biggest change that I made that made a big difference for my deep sleep and just overall readiness.
That is awesome. Well, so much great information in a relatively short period of time, because I know that you have a lot more to share. And the book Keto Flex, definitely for those listening, run to grab that. And how are some other ways that people can share or not share and share, please share, but that they can follow what you're up to and learn more about you? I know actually I was introduced to you from a friend of mine, Daniel Hamilton, who has a blood sugar podcast. And she had actually shared a link to one of your breakdowns of how to read basic blood lab panels and how to understand those if you are keto and what to be aware of and what not to. So fantastic information, certainly on YouTube. But what are some other ways that people can follow what you're up to?
Yeah, thank you, Molly. And Danielle's awesome. I was just on her podcast.
Oh, amazing.
And you're going to be on mine. So that I would start right there. You know, the Keto Camp podcast, Molly's going to be on there very soon. So that would be a great transition from your podcast to the Keto Camp podcast. We have two, we just released today with Sean Wells. Sean's episode just came out today.
Yes.
Episode 253, I think it was. And he totally crushed it. So that would be a great resource. The book can be found over at ketoflexbook.com. It's available for paperback and Kindle. Tomorrow, I'm actually going into the studio, a recording studio, to start the audio for the audiobook for that. So that'll be out in May or June. And then Instagram at the Ben Azadi, and then Keto Camp, Camp with the K on YouTube. Those would be the best places to find me.
So great. Well, you're certainly committed and consistent and reliable with putting out fantastic content on many different platforms. I'm excited for the audio book version, a big audiobook fan. So can't wait for that. Yeah, that's going to be great. So yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time. It was such a wonderful experience to be connected with you. I'm at Biohacking Congress, and I believe we'll be seeing each other at the Miami one later on October. So very cool there. But yeah, just thanks again for the work that you're doing. And I know that this is only the beginning.
Thank you so much, Molly. I love the work that you're doing. You are a bright light in this world. Let's just continue collaborating and just making a difference. The world needs us more than ever. So I appreciate you. And I had a lot of fun today. So thank you.
Me too.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.